Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Strantz, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Oh boy, Drancer, do we have a lot to talk about.
Something
happened in the last 24 hours with the Canucks. One is all Canucks media got a lesson. Do not take this week off. If we didn't realize that last year with the Horvat trade,
we knew.
Do not. You know what's funny? I will say. So last year, I did take it off. We both took it off. The show was off the air the week before the All-Star game. This year, I decided not to. And on Sunday, I was like, man, I kind of wish I had. I was like, I don't know.
I knew. I knew.
I didn't know that this was coming, but
the All-Star break's always like a weirdly interesting time for news.
Mm. Well, I mean, like the contract extension thing, for Alvin, no surprise,
no,
right?
No.
You have a chance to sit down, talk it out, right? I get that.
Totally.
But
yeah,
the
big
the two
swing
big
trades
and trade in a you know back to back years, it's a fact pattern now. Don't take this week off. Do not do it.
It's a fact pattern now. Yeah, let's go.
Nothing more exciting than that.
No, look, Jim Rutherford likes to jump the market, right? Forget running out of time. This guy sets it.
Yeah,
and he's done so again. You know, it's interesting to me. Like, I actually think, I don't think the Canucks view it this way, but I actually think there's additional impetus, leverage to making this trade early. Rutherford likes to make trades early because I think he likes to set the market. Mm-hmm. I think he's comfortable determining what fair value is rather than waiting to see where the prices get. You know, this isn't a guy who obsesses with like the value of every deal. He obsesses over the fit of every deal.
Right.
Right. Very much in line with Coach Jigsaw's puzzle guy preferences. And so I think he's comfortable, you know, doing the Bo Horvat trade ahead of the market. And ultimately, at the end of it, once the deadline passes, I think it was totally fair to say, hey, they might have misjudged the market somewhat on the price of taking long-term cap space.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There might be rental returns for, you know, players who are bigger name players, guys like Jake Guentzel, that are equal to or less than what the Canucks paid for Lindholm. But ultimately, I mean, do you know who the second highest scoring pending unrestricted free agent right-handed center is behind Elias Lindholm?
I don't even want to think.
It's Brodzinski.
Yeah.
He has 11 points.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in Lindholm's case, he was one of one, and getting the shopping done early from Rutherford's perspective typically is about, like, giving the guy more time to acclimate, shooting a lightning bolt into the locker room. We believe in you. We think mm-hmm. you have a chance. Carry yourself like it. But for me, I ain't getting your shopping done early this year, given the massive prize of winning the West. Like, everything you can do to juke your chances of finishing ahead of the Winnipeg Jets and the Colorado Avalanche and avoiding the seven really good playoff teams in the West and instead facing whichever striver from that, you know, mushy Blues, Kraken,
Predators, etc.
I mean, we saw it last night. Like, I don't know if you watched a lot of Kings Predators, but the Kings are in a different weight class, fundamentally. I don't care how bad their month has been. I don't care about the Dubois trade working out or not. It hasn't. Like, what I care about is you watch those two teams play and you're like, oh, this is different. Fundamentally different. You'd far rather face one than the other come playoff time. And getting Lindholm now, I do think meaningfully jukes, like Dom Lecision upgraded their point projection by 2.5 points just off the back of this trade. Well, that might seem marginal, but margins
mean a huge ton for potential standings.
Yeah. A ton.
Without further
given
ado,
the state of the Western race.
Let's get into the whiteboard here.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
Your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks today, February 1st, 2024, and as mentioned, starting with the headline, the Canucks acquire Elias Lindholm from the Calgary Flames. Going the other way, Andre Kuzmenko, prospect Hunter Brustevich, the Canucks' 2024 first-round pick, a conditional 2024 fourth, and also prospect Yoni Yermo. So big deal brings, as you said, a kind of one-on-one piece to the Canucks well ahead of the deadline.
We went over it 2 weeks ago when we were going like line item by line item of what we thought the Canucks' needs were. And it was like, hey, boy, isn't it weird that Elias Lindholm fits literally every single team need?
Yep.
But he does. The fit is just about perfect. You know, one reaction that I sometimes have when a team goes out and buys at the deadline is the old not enough pucks to go around reaction, right? You bring in a high-octane offensive player, and on paper, people are like, wow, Rick Nash and Marian Gaborik. And it's like, guess what? Two puck-dominant guys playing together sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, and it's kind of hard to know until you actually see it. Well, the good thing about Lindholm is even though he's had an off year, and he's really had an off year, I think it's important to note, right? This has not been a guy that's been at a top-line level this season. In fact, I think you could describe it as middle six, even, as opposed to second line, right? Middle six being the tactful way of saying third line. But in a better offensive environment, like, this guy is still getting tremendous defensive results. He's still a driver in terms of what he can bring through the neutral zone. He has the versatility to play wing or center. He wins a bucket load of draws and is now Vancouver's only, like, right-handed centerman with a face-off winning clip north of 40%, right? Because Lafferty's kind of a centerman, but has struggled in the circle this year. He's an experienced bumper guy, right? So he can slot in 5-on-4, and the Canucks get an upgrade at the net front and that you can move Besser there, where he's been really effective both in the past as a playmaker and of late as a screener. We haven't seen him spend a ton of time by the blue paint on the power play this season, but we've certainly seen him impact a lot of Canucks goals in the dirty areas of the ice. And he is, day one, this team's best penalty-killing forward. Like, not all that close. Honestly, like, he's going to be the first guy. Like, I think they can throw Bluger and him over the boards now to start every penalty kill. Reduces some of the burden on JT Miller, right? Fewer opportunities to get hit really hard by by pucks, which is important. And will be an upgrade for this team 4-on-5, which is still, you know, an area where they're about average, which represents a significant improvement.
Yeah, the thing with Lindholm, as you were outlining there, is just you can use him in so many different ways. And I think especially when you make the comparison with Kuzmenko, like, that's ultimately what the discussion with Kuzmenko was. It's just his utility just kept dropping. The number of roles he could fill, the number of situations you could use him in was narrowing down, and it was looking like it was going to be zero come the playoffs, right, based on how his usage was trending. Now you get a guy where you like him at even strength. You like him on the power play. You like him on the penalty kill. He can play center. He can take those draws for you. He can go up against the other team's top line if you need him to. He can play on the wing if you want him to. The comparison I was actually kind of thinking, like, he almost strikes me as a premium version of what Pew Suter has been for this team, right? Where it's like, hey, you have a problem that needs solved in your lineup? Put Pew Suter there. You got an open spot in your top six? Try Pew Suter out there. You know, hey, We need a fifth guy on power play one. Well, let's see what Pew Suter can do there. Penalty killing, let's see what Suter can do there. I think Lindholm is a superior version of that. And as we talk about, you know, Tocchet being the puzzle guy, this is like a special puzzle piece that fits with every other puzzle piece. You know what I mean?
It's this is the master key?
Yeah, this is basically the master key. And he might not be elite at all of those things. As you say, like, really good penalty killer, really good defensive results. But just the fact that you can put him out there with confidence in so many different roles, I think, is a huge piece of this.
If he replaces Bluger with Garland and Dakota Joshua, I think that line is better.
Yeah.
If he plays with Pedersen on the wing, I think that line has a chance to be really good. If you play him with Suter and Mikheyev and sick them on Tufts on home ice and create easier sledding for Besser, Pedersen, Miller, like, whoo. Like, if that works, look out.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a variety of different ways he can be used. I do think the club, and Rutherford's explicitly said so on various other programs, certainly intends to take a look at him with Pedersen first. But, you know, how things start isn't how they end necessarily, even within the context of a single game. So, you know,
let alone a playoff series, for example, right? Where it really can pay dividends to have these different looks you can go to.
But for me, the key to the Lindholm bounce back, right? The key to this Canucks team having acquired a piece that really puts them over the top, in my view anyway, is Lindholm bouncing back offensively. Okay? I do think, given the price paid, and it is a significant price. I don't want to get a digression. We'll get into what the Canucks
We'll get into the price.
But what I really like about this deal is he's not a guy who needs the puck. And in fact, the way he creates offense, the way he's best used offensively, is as an off-puck guy working to find quiet ice where he can then get a quick release shot on net. That's how he scored 40 goals a couple years back. That's when he's at his best. And that's like exactly the type of profile that I like fitting into a team environment. You put him with Pettersson and he doesn't need...
No.
Like, Pettersson's still the guy who they'll need to cook in terms of driving the offensive production of that line. But Lindholm can certainly help by being a useful finisher and otherwise help him do some of the dirty work in transition and defensively. I mean, that to me makes him a good fit. If you're hoping in making this deal that Lindholm's offensive production is going to bounce back somewhat at 5-on-5, like, a big part of the bet is whether he plays with Garland, whether he plays with Miller, whether he plays with Pettersson, you're going to have a pretty high-end playmaker on the ice with him at all times. And he's the type of player that can eat, you know, in those minutes without also interfering or like getting in the way or struggling to build chemistry with the more puck dominant guy on the line. So that to me is like the crux of this trade turns on, like, he can still be a useful player filling a variety of, he can provide, even if his offense doesn't bounce back, he'll provide marginal upgrades for the Canucks at just about every game state. But for this to be a deal that provides more upside than that, and I think there's a chance that it can, I do think the offense needs to come, and I like the profile of his game fitting in with whomever in the top nine the Canucks play.
He's got a lot of options for what they can do with him. Okay, to the price that they paid to give up, or to the price that they had to give up to acquire Elias Lindholm, not cheap, but I also don't think an outrageous price to pay either. Like, in line, I think, in a lot of ways with what the Canucks acquired in the Bo Horvat deal, going back to last year's big trade.
Yeah, I mean, there's some actually pretty interesting mirroring between Lindholm and Horvat. Like, first of all, when Horvat was struggling, was it right during that Boudreau bump season, right? And went to Adam Oates in the offseason. Like, one thing he did very self-consciously was study where Elias Lindholm scores goals from. He even upped the flex on his stick to be a closer match with Lindholm. So, like, Horvat patented, in some ways, his shooting game, you know, which earned him that huge deal from the Islanders and netted the Canucks what they netted in that deal, in part, off of the player that the Canucks have now acquired who, you know, is kind of a Horvat replacement. And explicitly, over the course of multiple months, by the way, because the Canucks have been in pursuit of Lindholm for a while, even though things really intensified, I think, beginning about Saturday of this past weekend, the deal was specifically built around the structure of the Horvat trade. So you've got the first.
Yeah.
You've got Hunter Brustevich. You've got Joni Jurmo. And you've got the conditional fourth, which can become a third, and it would become the higher of Vancouver's two thirds, provided that the Canucks advance to the Western Conference Final. No worries about paying that premium.
Nope.
Just make it. Just go. Just play hockey till late May, boys. So, you know, I think I have this real, I don't know if you know this about me, but things annoy me for no reason.
Yes, I have. I have realized that.
You have? Okay.
Yeah, I've noticed.
I thought I played it close to the vest.
No.
I thought I was always composed in public. I don't like a player like Brustevich being heavily hyped up by a fan base until the moment they're traded, at which point it's like, they're trash. They're nothing. Like, Brustevich is absolutely... look, whether he amounts to anything or not in the NHL is an open question. It was an open question before the Canucks traded him. It's an open question today. What we know is that he's popped in a major way. Okay? He's had a phenomenal... Like, he's tracking in an exceptional in an exceptional direction based off the fact that he's leading the OHL in scoring as a right-handed defenseman. He's not the biggest guy, 6 foot tall, but he's like a bulky guy. He's not, you know, a slight defender. And here's the main thing to remember about the Brustevich piece of this. He's a volatile player type, right? Occasionally you'll see an offensive defenseman with his type of toolkit pop. And when they do, when they really hit, they are some of the best players in the league, like some of the most valuable pieces in the league. But there's also a long list of guys like Bockvist, Ty Smith, even Brent Clark's sort of making a slower adjustment than you'd have hoped, right? But also out of nowhere, you get the Sean Durzies of the world, right? And that's a hugely valuable piece for the Arizona Coyotes. The question for Brustevich is, you know, the skating side, the defensive side, although he's made big gains there. And then the number one question for this player type, whether or not they'll hit, do they have the baseline level willingness to throw a hit and take a hit at the NHL level against NHL-sized human beings? You know, those are open questions. But if he crosses those off and combines that with his production, like, there's a chance he's a really, really good player. And there's also a chance he's a quad A, you know, TJ Brennan type. I don't know. But it's like one of those where it's a good bet by the Flames. I like the Flames buying early on a guy that's tracking this in this promising way. And as you know, I never have a problem with a team being like, hey, this prospect we drafted in the third round now has the value.
His value has spiked and we can use that.
Now he has the exchange value of something more like a second.
Yep.
Let's capitalize on that while we can. So I like the bet both ways. I just think we should note, like, this price paid looks like market price. It's very much in line with the Ryan O'Reilly exchange, absent an additional second-round pick, which the Leafs sent the Blues in order for them to retain half the salary, no retention on Lindholm, and the Horvat deal, which it was, like, consciously, by both sides, built around. It's a big price. It's a good player. Fundamentally, focusing on the value here is to miss the forest for the trees. This trade will not be judged and should not be judged, in my view, based off of, is it an overpay?
Yeah, or like,
is it a value deal?
If the player they pick it with the first round pick turns out to be good or not. You know what I mean? It's like, well,
That adds some salt to the wound. And we're not going to ignore it.
No, but it's not, it doesn't retroactively change whether it was a good deal or not.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
Because you always know that's a possibility when you trade the pick.
It just becomes more painful if the fit's not good.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, it's, does this trade upgrade the Canucks' chances in the Western Conference sufficiently? I think it does. I think it's a fair price paid and a really good hockey fit for the Canucks.
Broadsheet portion of the whiteboard today, and we got a very, very busy show. Obviously, tons of reaction to the Lindholm deal. Jason Bukala will join us at 12:30. Jeremy Colleton, Abbotsford Canucks head coach, will join us at 1. Really looking forward to that. Some people have texted in, so does this mean you're not doing the trade show? Yes, and this is really nobody's fault but ours, Drance, for not realizing that this could happen.
Yeah.
We talk incessantly. Oh, Jim Rutherford likes to do his work early ahead of the deadline, and it's like, oops.
Jump in the market.
We left it a little too late. We'll see. Maybe we'll do like the depth version of it tomorrow. I don't know.
And maybe we just postpone it another week and do it as like a post-Lindholm.
Yeah, figure it out.
What do the Canucks do now?
Yeah, exactly. We'll try to figure something
out. But yeah, all of your suggestions included the Canucks 2024 first and Andre Kuzmenko.
Andre Kuzmenko.
But by the way, again, I do think it's worth noting, because I didn't bring it up. But the first is the most valuable piece in that deal. And then it's Brustevich, and those are the material costs. There's other stuff in the deal which is, you know, of value. I'm not trying to diminish it. But two really big pieces, and then Kuzmenko. And because we didn't bring it up, but I think it's an important part of this. I really do think it's important to look at this deal as the Canucks paid Brustevich a first and some auxiliary assets, okay? And in return, netted Elias Lindholm and $5.5 million in cap space next year.
I think
that's a crucial part of this deal.
That flexibility is very, very significant.
You know how I love my flexibility.
We can talk about this at some point, and look,
I don't know why
again, we don't want to
so
get it. I don't want to get ahead and start looking to the off season, but all of a sudden, the flexibility and the different things they could do in the summer is huge.
Well, right? We need to spend a segment going over, like, Elias Lindholm is not Patterson Insurance and like some of the other affiliated with this deal. But yeah, anyway.
All right. What else in the broadsheet? Quickly. So I just loved this quote from Elliot Friedman on the Jeff Merrick show. He says, what this trade says is the Vancouver Canucks think they're going to win the Stanley Cup this year. And he said it dead seriously. You love to hear it. You love to hear the confidence. Although I know Jim Rutherford was a little more demure when he was on the Merrick show a little bit later.
No, well, I think whether they think they can or not, they think they can enough that they're going to put their best foot forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's I think, the overall.
Okay. Of course, there was the reports out there last night that Chris Tanev could end up being involved in this deal. Friedman says the Canucks asked about Tanev. The price was prohibitive right now. He says it's something that will get revisited in the offseason. I should also mention Rick Dhaliwal saying the Canucks are going to monitor Tanev. So Friedman saying maybe they revisit it in the offseason when he's a UFA. Dhaliwal saying that like maybe revisit it before the deadline as well.
Yeah, and I think they tried.
Yeah.
I think they tried. I think there's a lot of interest around Tanev. I think there's a sense that Tanev might be the most desirable defenseman, rental defenseman on the market.
Mm-hmm.
I just think what the Flames are hoping for or expecting in return wasn't something the Canucks felt they could do in addition to the significant price paid here. We'll see. We'll see if it gets revisited should the price drop a bit.
Lineup notes, and by the way, we'll get into a little
there's
bit
no
more.
Question. Like, there's no question. A, civic holiday if Chris Tanev returns. B, the Canucks organization really enjoys civic holidays.
Okay. If they had done, if they had done the Lindholm Tanev.
Oh,
package,
my goodness. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my. Oh, man. A couple weeks ago, you were off for some reason. I did the show by myself, and I said what Rutherford needs to do is like the Steph Curry heat check where he pulls up from the logo against OKC and hits the game-winning shot. That would have been the heat check right there. The Lindholm Tanev package deal 6 weeks out from the trade deadline.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Oh, man, that would have been absolutely amazing. Quick lineup notes. The only thing I'll mention is that Jim Rutherford said in a couple of different venues that he's talked to Rick Tocchet, and he suspects that Elias Lindholm will play with Elias Pettersson at least to start, but obviously
I think there's a little bit of doubt on that. Like, I think it's very much like, make no mistake, Rick Tocchet's going to make his own decisions. But yeah, I think in your mind's eye, you trade Kuzmenko, who was supposed to be Pettersson's running mate this season. That hasn't quite worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Canucks have a new running mate for him.
Playoff forecast, as you mentioned, Canucks odds get a boost in Dom's model here because of this trade. They're now up to a 64% chance to win the Pacific. Edmonton's at a 29% chance. That's a pretty big gap right now. It's the highest it's been all season for the Canucks.
When it was, what,
57?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a 6%.
That's meaningful. Yeah. That's, like, very, very meaningful.
What are their Stanley Cup odds at?
Still 5%, which I think
that's
up 4.
That's up 1.
Yeah,
That's meaningful.
91%
remember, that
chance.
Model cannot quit the Edmonton Oilers.
Yes.
So until the Edmonton Oilers have a stake through their hearts,
are dead
the model is never going to rate the Canucks as like having a commensurate chance with what we might expect.
Yeah.
Just because the model is like very, very confident that Edmonton's the best team in hockey.
91% chance overall to have home ice in the first round for the Canucks. Betting odds.
Let's go. New odds posted now that we have our assignments in the NHL skills competition.
Let's go.
Okay. Overall, NHL skill champion, skills competition champion, Connor McDavid is favored at 6.5 to 1, followed by Cale Makar at 7 to 1.
Okay.
Quinn Hughes comes in at 9 to 1. Pettersson comes in at 9 to 1. And JT Miller comes in at 10 to 1, ahead of William Nylander and tied with Austin Matthews and Leon Draisaitl. Pretty good company.
Yeah, very good company.
One-timers. There's a one-timers competition.
All right.
Pasternak is favored along with Matthews and Draisaitl all at 5 to 1. Pettersson 6 to 1. I don't know. That guy can wire a one-timer.
Absolutely he can.
NHL All-Star Skills Accuracy Shooting winner. Draisaitl, Pasternak, and McDavid are favored again at 6.5 to 1. Quinn Hughes 9 to 1. JT Miller 8 to 1. Quinn Hughes has the longest odds in this competition along tied with Cale Makar. Now this one's the good one. Hardest shot winner.
Okay.
Now remember, the NHL no longer brings defensemen to the NHL All-Star Game, it seems.
Well, Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes, but yeah, this is a forward-dominated category here.
There's a few rovers. Elias Pettersson favored to win the NHL Hardest Shot Competition, plus 150. Hard to make money off Elias Pettersson, so if you want to make money off someone, JT Miller is has the second shortest odds in this category, plus 350. Makar, Pasternak, and Matthews bringing up the rear. Stick handling winners, Pettersson 6-1, Hughes is 7-1. Passing challenge winners, this is the event that Hughes is favored, 6.5-1. JT Miller has the longest odds at 10-1. And then the fastest skater winner, Hughes has the longest odds in the competition at 12-1. In fairness to him, McDavid, Barzal, and Cale Makar are all competing.
McDavid is a prohibitive favorite, I would think, there.
Where's your regional pride, bro?
Come on, it's Connor McDavid.
Coquitlam's Matthew Barzal. Let's go.
Sure. Okay, that's
they call
the
them the Coquitlam Express, and
by
he's
the way,
from Coquitlam.
You can't bet on this, but Lindholm is now 100% going to be the first pick of the Hughes-Pettersson. Because Lindholm's there, right?
Yeah, maybe.
They have to take him first.
They should.
Come on, new guy?
Yeah, new guy.
You got to do it.
But, like, very seriously, before you poopaw Matthew Barzal's chances here.
I'm not poopawing anything.
Yeah, you sound like the grand poopaw.
Grand poopaw.
Barzal plus 185. McDavid plus 130. So it's not a huge gap,
not
man.
Not prohibitive favorite, but he is the favorite.
Okay, great.
All right.
Said in the tone of a snotty kid who's technically correct.
That's the best kind of correct.
Yeah, but he's the favorite.
The iconic Coors Light Chilltrain.
I shouldn't have raised my voice like that.
That's
to
all right.
To be, I'm just outraged on Barzal's behalf.
That's right.
Anyway, I know we need to go to break or Dom's going to get mad.
Dom's not here, so he can't get mad.
That's
Take
true.
That, Dom. He's
mad in absentia.
Okay. The iconic Coors Light Chilltrain is heading to Las Vegas for the big game, and it just made a stop in Vancouver, leaving behind a trail of epic prizes. On February 1st and 2nd from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., look for its frozen tracks at Robson Square. Hey, that's today, right now, for a chance to win instant prizes that deliver big game day chill or the ultimate grand prize, a trip to next year's big game event. Learn more at CoorsLight.ca/thechilltrain. No purchase necessary. Must be 21 plus for the grand prize. Full contest details at CoorsLight.ca/thechilltrain. We'll take a break. Jason Buchla from Sportsnet up next here on Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650.